All right, we have about 100 participants. Additional people are joining as we speak, but we'll go ahead and start for those who've been patient waiting, and we appreciate your time in joining this one of our many town halls at this point on the case of NRIA, National Realty Investment Advisors, now AIRN, Liquidation Trust, as the Liquidation Trust approved by the plan post-confirmation in the NRIA case. So again, thank you all for joining and listening in. And for those who submitted questions, we'll address those questions during and after this call. As in the past, we have an agenda that includes an introduction of those who we believe are on the call, as well as the real estate update that we give in each of these calls, an investigation and litigation update, an update on the claims, reconciliation, and objections. And then, of course, we'll address questions by many of you who submitted questions, and a closing statement by the liquidation trustee. So that's essentially the agenda. Nothing new for those who participated before. We do have a lot of new information, though, which is important. And we have information that we are working on that will make, we hope, the next town hall to be very, very significant. So with that, I'll introduce myself. I'm Louis DeLucia of Ice Miller, one of the attorneys handling this case on behalf of the Liquidation Trust. Also on the call is Michael Ott from Ice Miller. We also have the liquidation trustee representative, Matthew Ward, on the call as well. And we have AIRN and management CEO, we have Rick Budd on the call as well. And I think we have Tommy Fierro as well, who is the financial person for AIRN and management. And we are the representatives of this liquidation trust for this call. So that is a general introduction of who's on the call at this point. So we'll turn it now, I guess, for the real estate update to Rick, if you don't mind, about where we are with respect to real to. Oh, I'm sorry. We also have Dan Polacek. My apologies. I didn't see his camera of Ice Miller as well, in connection with the white collar related as well as litigation related issues, particularly as to the letter we received, all of us, in connection with the U.S. District Court's solicitation of a victim impact statement. So he'll help us on that as well. So I'm sorry, Rick, go ahead with the real estate.
Okay. Are you all right? Okay. Hi, everybody. I will try to cover as much ground in a reasonable period of time as I can. Just from a macro standpoint, one thing we should all be rooting for, right, are lower interest rates. Our 10-year note went down the last couple of days, which is good. And Chairman Powell promised one reduction this year and a number next year. So not taking any political situations, but we all want lower rates sooner rather than later, whenever that happens. So I'll walk through the portfolio, right? Since the confirmation, we've sold commercial properties in Delray. We sold two properties in Hoboken, another property in North Bergen, condo properties in Brooklyn, Philadelphia, and Delray again. Our remaining properties, I'll just try to touch on them going, you know, north to south. We have our Bergen Line, 4901 Bergen Line asset in West New York, which is completed. I think last time we spoke, we had just refinanced out that property. That is going well. We're now embarking on starting really in earnest in July for, you know, releasing. Because we're about 99% leased, so that's the good news. The early indications are that our rate increase of about 3% should be okay, but you know, time will tell. But we're in good shape there. Our gross rent, still trying to get a building permit, having some logistical issues with the city. But again, the good news is they are a paying tenant, notwithstanding they haven't physically occupied the space yet. So that's all good news. Just a couple blocks away, we have the Grand, which has been under construction. We are expecting a certificate of occupancy by August 21, which will be great. That's 156 units that will be coming on the market. We're using the same property manager who we're happy with at 4901. So the Grand, will be a significant benefit. We are trying to close a belated construction loan on the Grand finish up what's left, plus allow us to recapture some previous advances that had been funded under certain requisitions. So we hope that can be completed by the end of this month. And then the Metro project, which for people is a sister, or I should say a mirror image of the Grand. If and when it's built, that would be the same 156 units, but we have no intention at the moment of building that. There's a parking lot in between. There are a lot of logistics, but for right now, that's where the Metro is. As we move down to Philadelphia, right, that site is a 22-acre site on the water in South Philadelphia, for people that know Philadelphia, about 2 miles from the sports complex and, less than 2 miles from the Walt Whitman Bridge. It's a great location, proximity to I-95, north, south, New Jersey. It's a large project. Approved for additional over 800 units with permits. We have been recently seeing more interest activity in the Philadelphia market. Rents have been pretty good. And in that South Philadelphia area, there's not a lot of competition right now. We might have mentioned Comcast is about to embark on a $2 billion spending spree in the sports complex area, which with hotels, restaurants, apartments as well, but that can only be a big benefit for us. So we're spending a lot of time there trying to find the right exit, the right resolution. Down to Fort Lauderdale, we have 2 sites, one approved for 389 units. The other site, again, same postage stamp across the street, same size. We have put our requests in, our application has gone into the design review board in Fort Lauderdale for 429 units. Again, favorably received. Going through the logistics, we would hope to have those approvals by the end of the year. These projects are so many projects on hold right now. Everyone, for the larger projects, people are very interest rate sensitive, waiting for that point and a half, whatever it's going to be for the 2 points on the construction loan. And then more importantly, as that brings down the cap rates, which is, what drives the valuation. So a lot of money poised for Fort Lauderdale. And again, we are being patient, but getting our other additional approvals in the interim period of time. We go across to Fort Myers, number of activities going on there. We did a demo just to refresh your memories if you need to know, right? We had Hurricane Ian, which basically destroyed our marina and destroyed quite a bit of the upland property. We've demoed the upland property. That is completed now. We're in the process now of doing demo in the harbor, which is, probably not something most of us have had a lot of experience with, but they're basically dredging the bottom of the harbor. They have to take out all of the old pilings and moorings and boat debris to establish it and get it ready for a rebuild so new pilings can be put in, et cetera. So that started recently. That'll be another 6 weeks or so to complete the harbor demo. That's assuming it stops raining in Fort Myers. They've had 10 inches of rain in the last 2 days, which kind of is not conducive for harbor cleanup, is what we're understanding. So with the upland, we do have numbers, information, offers to rebuild the marina. We've not made any decision on that yet. There's a lot of attractiveness to it because of the substantial increase in slip rates that's happened, particularly on the West Coast, the East Coast too, but the West Coast lost a lot of marinas back in the, and not just ours. And so far, nobody's really rebuilding. So there may be an opportunity, but we're looking at it closely. The other parcel or our upland parcel, which was approved for 352 units. We are just recently, within the last 2-3 weeks, filed for a PUD amendment with the city to move that to 377 units, which doesn't sound like, you know, it may have been worth the lift. However, our new design is going to extend the period of time for someone to build. In addition, because of the park configuration or part of the park configuration, we get what's called bonus density. So the approved units would be as much as 550 units. So it's a substantial increase. Right now, we've been having discussions again with numbers of different parties, but we believe we have to get through the amendment process. And again, we believe that will happen before the end of the year, if not sooner. That's basically the portfolio as it stands now, and just rooting for some lower interest rates.
All right, thanks, Rick. Some of that real estate obviously does overlap a little bit with litigation we're handling, but that may become apparent as we discuss it. But I'll jump now to the litigation update. There has been a lot of activity, just as there has been on the real estate side. In the litigation, we have right now more than 23 pending lawsuits. Since we last spoke in the last town hall, we have filed not less than 13 new adversary proceedings or lawsuits against 61 additional defendants, many of whom have as many as 15 counts against them. And that has brought, that has been essentially in the aggregate somewhere in the neighborhood of claims of over $500 million. And when you include the RICO claims, you're looking at well over $1.5 billion in claims filed against these 61 new defendants in the lawsuits that we filed. Many of those claims, and I'll share, see if I can share my screen for a second. I hope I'm doing this right, and you tell me, can you now see an Excel spreadsheet? I hope you can. In this Excel spreadsheet, Mike, can you see the Excel spreadsheet?
I can, although it's very, very small for me, and I would assume it's very small.
Rachel, how about if I do this? Is that better?
I think it's more.
I could see it if you drag your screen over. There's a button on the right.
Yeah, it looks better now. There's a double, like, parallel lines next to the videos, between the videos and the Excel. There you go. That's good. Did that work for everybody?
Yeah, I didn't do anything really to it except for just expand it. But let me start with this. This is basically, and I'll just give you an example. These are the ones in yellow. Can you see the yellow bolding on the left? That indicates the newer lawsuits that were filed in the last few weeks against all of these defendants and parties we've identified as individuals or entities from whom recoveries should be sought. The claims include everything from aiding and abetting securities fraud to actual securities fraud, to professional negligence, to fraudulent transfers, and the like. As you can see, we have brought actions against Brian Harrington, Mark Korsak, and others, Ival Turner, Josephine Amato, and others. We've also sued Bethany Salzano, Kyle Stefferni, Whipfley, the accounting firm, We've sued for certain fraudulent conveyance claims against individuals who received transfers that were paid for legal fees for the defense of Ray Gravato. We have sued other transferees such as Double Your Volume LLC, which were instrumental in some of the diversions of cash. We have sued, of course, Thomas Elzano, Ray Gravato, and some of his family members, Alina Badinska, Jamie Samul, and other family members who received transfers of cash. We've commenced four construction litigations related to projects on the various properties as well. All of these lawsuits were commenced in the context of continuing to augment what we hope to be a pot of litigation recoveries for distribution to all of you. That is just I obviously couldn't show the whole chart because of the complexity of the Excel spreadsheet showing it on this screen, but that's an example of the many lawsuits that we've recently brought. But I'll put the litigation to three buckets. One is the new lawsuits and the pending lawsuits that we currently have. I mentioned there's over 23 lawsuits out there that are pending, 13 new ones, over $1.5 billion in claims in terms of the RICO multiplier, otherwise over well over 500 million in claims sought. That's the bucket of litigations that are pending. We also have not less than, we obtained an order, you may have seen that order come across your desks or in your emails, an order extending the bar date by which we would be bringing these lawsuits till December 7th of this year. But in the interim, we also obtained actual agreements from at least 7 principal targets who have executed tolling agreements with whom we are discussing their potential exposure. And then the third bucket, so you have the first bucket's of pending litigations, the second are the major targets from whom we've obtained tolling agreements that have been executed, and the third are those who are subject to the tolling order, but we're also negotiating and sharing financial information to see if we can get a settlement with them regarding our claims of the trust against them in order to avoid a protracted litigation. And that's the third bucket, the non-disclosure agreement and asset sharing pool of defendants or targets. So those are the three big buckets that we are working on. To give you an example of, and I gave you an example of some of the litigations, these are all available obviously on Omni, and they should be available for you to see in terms of adversary proceedings. We certainly could share a chart like this with some of you if that's desired. But this chart is nothing more than just a summary and list that you see right on Omni anyway. So it's right there. We are looking at claims for fraudulent transfer by way of example of some funds that were transferred to for the benefit of Nicholas Elzano and family members of his, because some of the funds that we've identified through the assistance of the investigation by A&M, Alvarez and Marcel, and Rick Barry, is there have been funds that have been used to pay tax obligations of Nick Elzano and family members. So we've been looking at that. We've looked at, obviously, I'll give you an update on U.S. construction, but we've all, and other pending litigation, but we've also looked at claims against large financial institutions that are continuing and ongoing in terms of discussion, which I'm not going to get into detail here. We have also agreements with certain feeder funds that have been sharing information as to potential resolution of claims against them. So we're hoping that this next quarter of 2024 will be a period in which we are moving away from the investigation piece and into the recovery piece on the litigation. Again, the three buckets, people who aren't necessarily immediately willing to agree to resolution, we're pursuing, those who we are talking to that may generate a real recovery and are material, we have some tolling agreements and tolling order. And then there's the last bucket against whom we think that there'll be recoveries through consensual resolutions without the need of litigation, and maybe the cost of litigation could be avoided. So we're in that stage right now, is the discussion of bringing money in. We continue to interview witnesses. We interviewed a very important witness this week. It's subject to some confidentiality, so I don't want to get into that, but that witness has professed a desire to help us in coming to resolution on many of these cases. So one area that was asked about in questions, but I'll tell about it now in the litigation piece, is U.S. construction litigation. U.S. construction really overlaps three areas. One is claims reconciliation and claims resolution, as well as the actual claims against them. U.S. construction, you know, we have sued, we have amended the complaint. It is a extraordinarily robust complaint. They have answered, they've not moved to dismiss, and pursuant to the local rules in the bankruptcy court in New Jersey, we're moving to mediation. We're contemplating a mediation before a retired federal district court judge to see if that matter can be brought to a resolution without extended litigation. The claims piece, we've reached essentially in an agreement in stipulation that many of the claims filed by U.S. construction are duplicative of themselves, and they will be struck as duplicative claims filed by U.S. construction. So their claims should be cut at least in half by that process. On top of that is we are looking at addressing the balance of U.S. construction's claims under the plan. And that issue that we've talked about in the past regarding resolving U.S. construction is progressing. And we anticipate hoping to have that resolved so that a distribution, as you all know, is hopeful for 2024. Media Effective is a continuous litigation. Some of you asked about media companies. Media Effective is a pending litigation. We have an ongoing, very active. We've had at least 3 or 4 days in a continued preliminary injunction hearing. We have frozen, as you know, over $8 to $9 million of cash and the residents of the principal of that company. That litigation is continuing. The next hearing is on the 21st of June. Where it may be the final hearing, at least on the preliminary injunction piece. And then we hope to see a substantive resolution of that case through either a trial or a judge's ruling. But that is aggressively pursuing. Media Effective worked with Hybrid Media and others to do a lot of the advertising. Hybrid Media really never spoke directly to, NRIA or its principals. Javier Torres in Media Effective was that bridge, but that was more than 30% of the advertising budget and expenditure by this company. $36.9 million of the investor funds or funds from the NRIA were used to pay through Media Effective the advertising that was done here. And the other companies, such as Bill O'Reilly, Red Seat, and First Digital, are all also, they've been deposed. All three of them have been deposed. And we're looking at claims against those entities as well. The same is true, of course, with Bloomberg, who we understand participated in a lot of activity with the company and promoted the company through its websites or its activity on the media, in the media. And also, of course, Fox and CNN and iHeartMedia and others. So those are ongoing as we speak. Mona Shaw litigation is pending. Mona Shaw, as you know, is an attorney who specializes in immigration related issues and EB-5 funding. That's funding for individuals outside the country who wish to invest in job promoting type activities in the US and in exchange through a program to the federal government, obtain green cards, etc. That process, and Mona Shaw was involved in the preparation of PPMs, private placement memoranda, worked with Salzano and others in connection with soliciting investors, and she's being sued, as you know. There, the insurer has stepped to the plate, and we are in the process of discussing beginning mediation to be concluded in July of this year, so that we hope a resolution with Mona Shaw. And when I say resolution, I mean recoveries in cash for the benefit of the investors. That is what we're hoping for in July from Mona Shaw. Cipolla, the accounting firm that did work from roughly the first quarter of 2021 through the beginning of 2022 and into 2022 on behalf of the company, Received a $4.7 million pre-funded retainer and otherwise was involved in some of the work for the financial side of the company of NRIA. They've been sued by us, as you know. They filed a motion to dismiss. We have filed a response to that motion to dismiss, a very substantial and robust, robust response. And that motion to dismiss will be heard in July. And then if it's not dismissed, we'll be proceeding with the litigation or hoping to resolve it. I mentioned already in among the lawsuits that we have, and if you want to see it, it is adversary proceeding number on Omni. It should be there. 24-01458. That's 24-01458. We have sued the what we're calling insider promoters, individuals such as Brian Harrington, Ivel Turner, Alan Fallis, Josephine Amato, and others who were paid commissions for the sale of securities. They've all been sued, and that is now pending against them. We've also sued, as I mentioned, the active insiders. We call them active insiders. Those are individuals who have participated, such as Bethany Salzano, Kyle Stefferni, who were, as you'll see in the very robust complaints there, have been very active in that facilitation of the fraud. That is adversary proceeding 24-01457. We also sued Salzano's family members who received substantial funds. For example, they were paid through either web marketing or other entities, so that payments were disguised, but they went from NRIA to another entity, and then over to Jamie Samuel, Nicholas Salzano's former wife, or Olina Budinska, another former spouse, or the babysitter, or for Roboto's family members. Those people have been sued as well for those recoveries. Those aren't huge recoveries, but they're fairly material in the sense that any recovery for you, I think, is important. And that's docket number, adversary proceeding number 24-01451. Two large folks that we're speaking to that substantial funds went through, Deepit Anand and Haresh Sheth. We are speaking to those entities and their entities. We have tolling agreements with them, and we are talking to them about the claims of the estate against them. Because those are ongoing discussions, I'm not going to taint those discussions. The same is true with Levine Capital. Weingold was, and his law firm, is an individual who prepared virtually all the PPMs for the beginning of 2021 for this company. He was the lawyer who was the principal securities lawyer for NRIA during that period up until Reed Smith stepping in. And that complaint has been sued, it had been filed. He's been sued for all liability in connection with the PPMs. And that is at docket or adversary proceeding number 24-01440. Again, Weingold has been sued there. The Visions Federal Credit and Fannie Mae litigation, smaller amounts of money, but that relates to the house bought by Gravato through NRIA's transfer of funds. It wasn't his money. About $500,000 or so went directly to Fannie Mae. We've resolved that by obtaining actually title to that property. So the trust now has 82 Osprey. But in addition to that, we're suing Fannie Mae for just under $500,000. They filed a motion to dismiss. We have briefed it and responded to it. And the hearing is on for June 18th. But that is also for cash coming in, we hope, for fraudulent conveyance, because what happened is NRIA paid the money to Fannie Mae, transferred title of the property to us, meaning to Gravato. The NRIA never got the property or any value for that payment. It was a transfer by Gravato out from the investors, so we're trying to claw that back. Whipley, the accounting firm that worked for a number of years for the company, was also sued by us. That litigation was just commenced, and that will be proceeding in due course. Swiftly, that adversary proceeding is 24-01456. 01456. Other accounting firms are being looked at and will be a primary focus over the next weeks or so, and will likely be sued. We've also, as I mentioned, filed 4 construction related litigations, principally against DMR and Excavaria, as well as a couple of subs related to projects that are purely construction related, not bankruptcy related, but they're within the bankruptcy court. So that is a very, very quick overview of the litigation. A lot going on. More will be coming in the near future. There are discussions against and with various parties that are material and advanced, but because they are until the deals are struck, we cannot discuss them further until we can publicly. So those are just understand that in addition to all those lawsuits, in addition to the tolling order and the tolling agreements and the discussions with the NDAs of those individuals, there are material ongoing discussions to enhance recoveries from litigation. That is the litigation update. We can jump, I think, now to claims, reconciliation, and objections. So I already mentioned in part the USC, which is material. They have, you know, 50 million plus in claims filed. So that is working its way through the claims reconciliation process. Now, let me explain real quickly why all of this works together to get you the best possible return. And we're hoping to begin those distributions, hoping in 2024. And that is one, the litigation and the real estate piece you just heard about are the 2 sources of funds to generate the pot of money from which to make distributions. Number 2 is the claims reconciliation is to vet out, reduce, identify the true and allowable claims. And that's why USC is being vetted out and its claims are being culled and worked through. That's why what you will be soon be receiving is, everyone will be receiving, is a omnibus objection for duplicate claims. When you receive this objection, the purpose of it is to clean the docket. It's not to come after you. It's not to sue you or make or seek substantial monetary relief against the claimants who have allowed contributing investor claims. This is a motion that we are filing and serving, and you'll all receive copies, that says, all right, you're an investor. You have a net investor amount. You've seen that chart. You've seen it in your ballots. You've seen it in the attached to the plan that says, I have a net investor amount of, I'll make up a number, $100,000. That doesn't change with this motion. What it does is it says, and by the way, you also filed the proof of claim for 100 here and 100 there and 100 there. So all those additional hundreds don't give you a $400,000 claim. You have a $100,000 claim. You just filed it 4 times. So we're cleaning up the duplicate claims. That's what you're getting in a motion. And that is what we're attempting to do, is clean it up for distribution purposes. We're working through these claims with Alvarez and Marcel and ourselves, in addition to the duplicate claims, going through claims that need to be objected to so that we can take the cash that's on hand and only pay the legitimate creditors on this side. So I don't know, Mike, if you wanted to add to that, but that's what the claims objection process, and or Matthew, if you want, it's up to you.
Yeah, just, we are working on filing that objection. I would suspect we should have it on file this afternoon, later this afternoon or this evening. The service of it will go out to all the contributing investors within the next few days after that. We are setting it for hearing on the next available date that is far enough out, which would be July 16th. You know, that will hopefully go a long way towards cleaning up the claims register and getting us in a position to actually make distributions hopefully soon. If there are any questions about it after it's filed, you can reach out to me or to Ryan Hibbard. And we can hopefully answer with respect to, you know, why specific claims are listed, if something shouldn't be there. and we can talk through those things. But it should be relatively clear as what it's all it's doing is it's setting your claim as a contributing investor at the amount that is set forth on the investor schedule. Or, you know, if there are some discrepancies on that, there have been a few that have been shifted, you know, for reallocation, but that's all it's doing. It's not trying to squeeze anything past you or anything.
Exactly. I should add on claims that we did receive an inquiry or two most recently on claims trading. As stated in the plan and in the confirmation order, claims may not be sold or transferred post confirmation after the plan was confirmed last year. So claims trading is technically not permitted at this stage. All right, I think we're going to turn to investor questions now. And as I mentioned, there are basically a few buckets that these questions fall into. Those buckets are taxes, meaning the K-1 questions, collection and distribution efforts, AUSA request for victim impact statement, real estate litigation efforts, and miscellaneous. Some of this we've already covered in the summary of real estate and summary of litigation, so we won't address those questions again. But the K-1 question, if you're able to, I'm going to turn the podium over to Tommy Fierro to answer some of the questions on the K-1s, such as K-1 forms 2023 status, ? Et cetera. Tommy, you there?
While we're waiting for Tommy to potentially join, I will say the first question is, who can we speak to regarding an inaccurate K-1 that was recently received? If you have a question about a K-1, you can put in an email and send it to us, and we will forward it along to make sure it gets answered. You know, with respect to questions about specific K-1s, here's Tommy.
Sorry about that. I had myself on mute. So this is Tommy Fierro speaking, the CFO. I've gone through all of the questions that have been sent in, and you know, that the Ex-Miller team kind of categorized for us to address on this presentation. So I will address all of those in summary form today. As you may have known, the pre-confirmation K-1s for the period of January 1st, 2023 through August 25th, 2023 have been sent out via USPS. They should have been delivered to all of you by now. If you have not received one, please email me at info@mria.net and we'll have someone send you an electronic copy within 1 to 2 business days. Many of the questions that I've seen coming back from this batch of K-1s relate to, you know, why is there a zero balance, or why am I seeing a distribution on this K-1 that I did not actually receive in cash? So, you know, quick explanation there is that everyone's book balance of your partnership interest in the partner's portfolio fund has effectively been transferred to the AIRN liquidation trust as of August 25th, 2023, which was the effective date of the confirmation of the bankruptcy plan. This balance will be reflected as the opening balance on your 2023 post-confirmation K-1 for the period of August 26th, 2023 through December 31st, 2023, which is going to be issued directly from the AIRN Liquidation Trust. It's still going to be the same team. You can still contact myself and Christina, who's been sending all the K-1s. Still use that same info@nria.net address. And those K-1s are going to be due September 15th, 2024. So please keep in mind that both of these K-1s, including the one that you'll be receiving in September, does relate to 2023, and you will need to wait for the receipt of that second K-1. Before filing your personal taxes. The 2021 and 2022 amendments are still being worked on, and we expect to have those completed by the tax firm, hopefully by the end of summer, early fall. The ending balance of those 2022 amendments will match with the beginning balance of the 2023 K-1 that you just received. So we have been receiving some questions that the the balances don't match from 2022 to 2023. All of those balances have been trued up so that the 2023 beginning balances are accurate and kind of working backwards just based on the statute of when we need to have these filed. As we go back to prior years, those will match and roll up forward. With respect to the Ponzi loss, we have stated previously that amounts listed on line 13W, other deductions, relate to a Ponzi scheme related theft loss, and those can be reported on form 4684 on line 20. However, what you ultimately report and any deductions that you attempt to take on your personal tax return are ultimately going to boil down to the discretion of your personal tax advisor. We cannot give you individualized tax advice, and it's very important that you are speaking with your own personal tax advisor to make any statement on your tax returns. That being said, some of the key dates that you may want to relay to your CPAs are as follows. NRIA filed bankruptcy in June 2022. Nick Salzano and others were indicted in October of 2022. And Salzano ultimately pled guilty in February 2024 and is facing sentencing in August of this year. To the extent that anyone has any additional questions related to your K-1s or tax questions, things of that nature, again, my responses will likely be limited given that I cannot give individual tax advice, but any other questions or clarifications that you may find helpful, please feel free to email me at info@nria.net and I'll get back to everyone as soon as possible. That's all I have, so I'll take it back to the rest of the group. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Tommy. Let's jump to the next category of questions. Keeping this, we hope, to the hour that we forecast. That is collection distribution efforts. I think we've covered a lot of that already. I told you about the stages that would be needed in order to get that distribution, which again, we're targeting and hoping for in 2024. But let's start with some of the more particular granular questions. What assets of Salzano's have been seized for liquidation and what are they worth? Salzano, was pretty careful in having no assets. He basically lived in the house of 82 Osprey, which was owned by Grabato. Again, really bought, as you saw in the Visions litigation I mentioned earlier, through NRA funds, putting Grabato's name, and then he lived there, meaning Salzano lived there. The government nor we have been able to identify large buckets of any assets, Alvarez or Marcel or anybody, in terms of assets in his name that are directly traceable, other than, for example, transfers and family members or others that may have been holding funds for him that we're chasing. And that's some of the frauds and conveyance litigation we talked about against third parties where the term of art may be he parked money and is sitting. So that's why we're suing all these people for some of these frauds and conveyances to get the money back. And that's the answer to the second question is, are you clawing back assets? And that's what we're doing. We started doing that actually before he pled guilty. His plea of guilty on February 27th was helpful because it resolves the issue of whether or not there was a Ponzi scheme. He clearly admitted under oath that it was. What is the status of Ray Grabato? We understand that Ray Grabato remains in the Philippines. Obviously, haven't physically confirmed that yet in terms of physical. We've attempted to confirm where he is. We've traced what we could of his assets, including what we know he may have been in the Philippines, but we haven't given up on trying to get him, if at all possible. In terms of distributions, as I mentioned, we are working on one side of the ledger to bring in cash as much as possible, both on the real estate and the litigation side, and then attempting to reduce the number of duplicative or not legitimate claims on the other so that we can get down to the real number and make that distribution. That, by the way, is an answer to one of the other questions on here, which is why have general unsecured claims, those to be paid in full under the plan, have not seen a distribution. And that's why, because the reconciliation of claims is essential before any distribution could be made. And disputed claims, which include claims like USC and others, have to be resolved to, or at least reserved for, and that reserve has to be fixed through the claims reconciliation process. But we are working on that contemporaneously with the litigation and real estate side of things. All right, next is the AUSA request for victim impact statement. So we've got a lot of questions on that. And we have read it. We received one as well. I'm going to turn it over to my partner and colleague, Dan Polacek, who this is his area of law, and ask him to address some of your questions on this issue.
Hi, everybody, and thank you, Lewis. So everyone's in receipt of a letter that kind of looks like this. We have one ourselves, and we got a number of questions. The first one we have is, please go over the fraud victims restitution forms and procedure. No problem. So what the letter will allow you to do is, everyone received a verification form, and it's kind of akin to an affidavit. And here's what's happening. So Nick Salzano has pled guilty to an offense, and the loss amount for his offense is specific, to his charged crimes, which is to say, the prosecutor and his defense counsel have agreed upon a certain amount for which he'll be responsible for essentially repaying if he can, or otherwise it will help with determining what his sentence will be. So in white collar criminal cases, the amount you're responsible, the amount of loss you're responsible for incurring results in a, what they say, a recommended guideline range for the court to impose a potential sentence. So, essentially the amount of money that you've caused to be lost equals a lot of times how much jail time you should serve in a white collar criminal case. What's happening now is the probation office has got to interview Nick Salzano, and they want to understand the nature and extent of the harm he's caused to the victims. And in order to question him in a way that's meaningful, they've reached out to you and they've said, hey, we'd like to understand how much you've lost. So in this form, you're going to tell them how much you've lost, and you're just going to answer their question, right? It's just simply asking for your name, your mailing address, and your email, all right? And then you're going to attest, right, in a declaration to how much you've lost. And once you've done that, any information, like in terms of verification forms, you should send that as part of your email. Now, I'm going to pivot for a moment when I'm done to ask Lewis what he believes is the best form of documentation to submit with this declaration that I'm holding up. This is it. And at the bottom, you can also kind of answer this question. As a result, when it says this offense, that means Nick Salzano's crime against you, like as a result of his Ponzi scheme, what has happened to you? Have you gone bankrupt, become insolvent? Have you, suffered a substantial loss of retirement? You should check everyone that applies. Okay, so just by way of recap, fill out this form, check the boxes that apply. Okay, you're going to email it back to the address that they gave you, which can be found in the middle of your letter. Okay, this is the letter that you got. It can be found in the middle right here. It starts with NJP underscore. That's where you email it. And you'll email that and your declaration about what you've lost and check the boxes that apply. Okay, it doesn't need to be notarized. Lewis, before I go on to the second part of this, could you chime in terms of what you think is the easiest and most effective way to show proof of loss?
Yeah, I think many of the, if not everyone, certainly on this call or for that matter, those who are claimants, filed a proof of claim, right? And that proof of claim has been attested to under Title 18 and filed with Omni. So most people probably have that proof of claim either electronically or otherwise. It may be a good idea to attach the proof of claim, which will be proof of the investments that they made with the attachments and a Title 18 declaration, which is your proof of claim form. And that should be enough.
Okay, thanks, Louis. I want to point something out to everyone. Just make sure whatever you say your loss is truthful and accurate, right? If you think to yourself, I'm going to say a lot more because I really want to get this guy in trouble. Remember, this is a declaration. So they ask you at the very bottom, I declare under penalty of perjury that the foregoing is true and correct. So just make sure it's truthful and accurate and you'll be all set. Again, where do you send that? You send that to this email address right in the middle of this document sent by the, you know, sent by the courts. Okay, there is a separate piece to this.
Well, then, Dan, before we move on to the next piece, let's just remind everyone that what you do submit, make sure you remove personally identifiable information. For example, if you have your social security number on there, your personal bank account, try to redact it. Take a black, a black marker and not write exactly. It's one of those things and wipe out that number so no one sees it. But go ahead, Dan, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, no, that's fine. That's important. Just make sure that you scratch out enough numbers that no one can, make sense out of that. Okay. If you turn to the second page of the letter you received, right? So the letter looks like this. You'll see in the top paragraph of the second page that I've highlighted, it says the court shall also consider the social, psychological, and medical impact on you as a result of the offense. Okay. Any information in this regard, such as a separate victim impact statement, can be forwarded to my attention as well. And that means Adriana Garcia, the person who signs this, who's the senior U.S. probation officer. This is important. Please note that any information or statements provided by you will be considered by the court and may be shared with the attorneys for both parties. Okay. So what's she saying? She's saying is, if you want to submit a letter, a separate letter that you would address to Adriana Garcia at U.S. probation, that's this person who signed it, right? And you would send it to her attention and her email address, okay? Which is the email address we'll find, which is the email address that whatever email address she provides. But you can also just put it in the mail and we can help you get her email address. But what goes in that is kind of like the human side of what has happened. Some people have had to leave their homes. Some people have had extraordinary medical costs that they can no longer pay. Some people have had their life savings wiped out. If you'd like to tell the probation officer about that, you should. And you can write a separate letter about the impact it's had on you and your life and your family, and anything else that you feel is important. The judge will review that as part of his sentence for Mr. Salzano. Importantly, though, just remember those letters may not remain confidential, and at a minimum, they might be shared with both defense counsel and obviously the prosecuting attorneys, right? But it's primarily for the court, it's primarily for the judge to make his determination under the sentencing factors, kind of like the nature and circumstance of the offense. So it is a separate letter from the declaration, and you would simply address Ms. Garcia, you'd send it to her attention. And I haven't scoured this to see if she's left her contact information, but we could certainly verify that. It might be in the letter.
Dan, do you think that the supplemental declaration, if there is any to be submitted by anyone in connection with their psychological, social, or medical impact, would go to that NJP underlined US v. Salzano?
I think that's probably, the only thing I'm unsure about is, it's interesting. She says such a separate victim impact statement can be forwarded to my attention as well.
Right, right.
So yeah. I don't know if that email that you just said goes to her or not.
Right, right.
If that part is unclear, by the way, it's not a declaration. There's nothing for you to sign if you want, meaning there's nothing for you to attest to. It's just a letter. It's just a letter that says, dear Judge so-and-so, this is how this crime has impacted me. And it's totally up to you and what you want to share and what you want the judge to know. So those are two separate things. So you have the declaration of what you lost, check the boxes that apply, and attach the form, meaning it's like, you know, a single PDF, scan both documents, and send it to the email address in the middle of the page. Separately, if you feel like you want to write a victim impact statement, a letter, you just address it. You can address it to the judge, but send it to the probation officer's attention. And I think it would be fine if you just, if you know, you just dropped it in the mail and said, attention, you know, Adriana Garcia, Ray Salzano. But I think that would be totally fine. And lastly, I'm just want to make, and I'll go over all the questions to make sure I've got them covered if I didn't in this presentation. And lastly, if you want to appear in court and you want to speak, you can call the assigned prosecutor, who's Jonathan. There are a couple of them, but you can call any one of them and they give you the phone number of the victim witness coordinator, who will kind of coordinate whether, you know, not every single person could speak, but they'll try to work with you to see if you can be heard. If you want to speak in court, you absolutely don't have to. Okay. So again, you got the declaration of what you lost, your proof of claim. You'll send that in, check the boxes that you apply. You'll send it to the address in the middle of the page, the email, and then separately a victim impact statement, only if you want to, about how this has affected or impacted you. All right, let's go over the questions real quick. Go over the fraud victims restitution forms and procedure, check. What documentation would you suggest that we attach to prove our loss? We discussed that. It's been identified by the district court that I'm a victim. How should I respond? We've talked about that. Obviously, all this is voluntary, by the way, guys. So not required to do this. If you want to, though, you can. Also, I will tell you one other part. Why would you do it? Because if the court finds money in Salzano's possession and custody and control, and if you have filed a declaration talking about your loss, you may be entitled to recover restitution from Nick Salzano himself. Now, we're obviously doing that outside of the criminal process, right? But this is just another avenue. It's very unclear how much or if any funds Nick Salzano actually has, but there's certainly no harm in putting your stake in the ground. Okay. I've been identified by the district court as a victim. How should I respond? Essentially follow the forms and do the victim impact statement letter if you want. Okay. Okay. We've talked about what's the guidance to file the declaration. We did that relating to loss. Is there any disadvantage or advantage to respond to the recently sent out victim notification letter? There's absolutely no disadvantage to you by not submitting one or submitting one. Like I said, it is an opportunity to make a claim for restitution should they find funds that Salzano has that he's able to make the victims whole. So there's certainly no disadvantage in that. The victim impact statement is for you guys to be heard on how this has, you know, hurt your life. And look, the judge will read the letters. He'll read every single one of them. That might have a really strong impact about the term of imprisonment he chooses for Nick Salzano. You know, so what would be an example of what a judge might say? He might say, look, Mr. Salzano, I've reviewed no less than 150 letters of people's lives you've ruined. And, you know, that's had a big impact on this court. So, that's how it would be used. You certainly don't disadvantage yourself or the criminal case if you decide not to do that.
Dan, just a second. Someone is inadvertently sharing their email and their web their screen. So I think somebody who
email. If anyone's typing an email right now,
yeah,
be aware that we can see it.
You're sharing your screen with the group. You might want to take it down. I think it's Patrap or something. Is the name that I saw pop up?
There you go. Thank you. For Salzano's sentencing, what should we claim in the declaration of victim loss? What you want to claim is what you lost, truthfully and accurately, and you want to attach your proof of claim, no personally identifying financial information. Okay, so kind of like in summary, is there any disadvantage or advantage? Not really, other than you get to stake your claim to potential restitution. Do you need to file a victim impact statement? Not if you don't want to, okay? Does it disadvantage you if you didn't file a victim impact statement, meaning the separate letter? No. But the judge will read it, and the probation office will look at it too. And so, you know, again, they're going to interview, probation will interview Nick Salzano. And here's why they do that, just for a little bit bigger picture. When they interview him, they'll get like a picture of who he is, what his personality is like, how remorseful he is. And then they'll report that to the judge. So the judge has that information when he's crafting a sentence or a punishment. And that's why this is happening. So they're seeking more information from you. Okay. So, you know, again, look at where they send this stuff to in the emails. No problem sending it to Ms. Garcia to her attention at probation. So I think, Louis, that covers everything.
Thanks, Dan. Thank you. All right. So we'll wrap up now in terms of the very few, two maybe minor questions. One is it possible that one can leave their funds in the new reorganization instead of receiving distributions and then try to grow back their investment? Unfortunately, no, this is a liquidation and a liquidation trust. So things are being liquidated. We're not continuing with an investment vehicle. And I think that may be it. Yes, okay. I think I've covered most everything else. So and with that, I think the last agenda item is any closing statements. The representative of the liquidation trustee may wish to state.
Can you give us the address, please?
Address of?
Of the where we report to return the forms.
It's in the letter. It's the in the letter. Yes. There's an email directly in the form in the front first page of the letter. njp_usvsalzano@njp.uscourts.gov.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Matthew?
Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just wanted to touch on just a couple of examples of things that I think are important to mention here so that the investors understand the intricacies of the scheme that we're dealing with. Louis is right that over the last week, we filed a dozen additional complaints, including against the family members of the perpetrators, their professionals. We're continuing the litigation against the chief advertiser. The evidentiary trial for that is coming up. I just want to say these are not simple boilerplate pleadings. If you guys look at the complaints that are being filed, so, for example, the complaint against two of the Salzana family members, just two of his family members, the complaint was 80 pages long. That's without exhibits. The complaint itself, 80 pages. It attached over 500 pages of evidentiary support for it. There were 50 exhibits attached. That was just one of the complaints. We filed 12 of them last week. Another complaint against more family members, it was extensive, very thorough. Louis mentioned the litigation with Cipolla. So Cipolla is an accounting firm that was working for the company. They are sitting on a massive retainer provided by the company for work that they never did. So we have sued them. And when we sued them, they have filed a motion to dismiss the complaint. So the point there is every step that we take, we face challenges, but we're not backing down. We're going to zealously pursue this litigation. And we're going to do it relentlessly until we succeed. So when they moved to dismiss our complaint, we filed an objection to their motion to dismiss. It was over 60 pages long. So we're cranking out the work product, and we're going to continue to do this, maximizing every dollar in the door for the investors on the call. For the people that we haven't sued, we have tolling agreements in place with them to extend our time to sue them. And we will have discussions with them, but if we don't get to deals with them, we will sue them. We're continuing with investigations, depositions, interviews of the fraudsters, their affiliates, promoters, banks, professionals. And to be clear, I can't take the credit for this work. This is the team of professionals that we have, which is Ice Miller, who has been doing a superb job on this litigation. This is an elaborate, extensive Ponzi scheme. There were dozens of entities set up by NRIA. And as we dig into this, we find out that it was not just NRIA entities, but then as money left NRIA and went to family members, the family members themselves had their own entities set up so they could hide the money, but we're unraveling it. Ice Miller is counsel. We have the Alvarez and Marcel team. Our team also includes former FBI investigators. New Jersey Bureau of Securities investigators are on our team, including Bill Waldie and Rick Berry. And they're being as thorough and successful, might I add, and we'll have some updates on that with respect to our discussion during the next town hall. But thorough work and success uncovering money for investors. We're working on the claims docket, which Lewis talked about. You heard some good developments on the real estate front, an update on the Grand property, the expansion of the Florida permit application. Rick didn't mention this, but I think Lewis mentioned it. We foreclosed on the house that was owned by Ray Grabato in Secaucus, New Jersey. So that was a Ray Grabato owned home. And after Ray fled, Nick Salzano was living there. Nick started living there for free. We now own that house. We took it from them. And we got in there and we found that there's water damage. So again, every step there's challenges, but we're overcoming those. We do think that there's a sizable amount of equity in that property. So we're gonna fix that property up and we're gonna flip it and we'll make money on it. And that money is gonna go to investors. So Rick and Tommy Fierro and Kevin Lynch and the company side team, they're just doing a fantastic job on the real estate side. I mentioned this during the last town hall, and it still holds true that every property that we have disposed of, every piece of real estate that we have disposed of during this liquidation trust, we have done so at or above the amounts that were projected in the Chapter 11 plan. So just again, understand that day in and day out, we are working to maximize value for you guys as investors and to get as much recovery as possible through this unfortunate situation. So that's all I have, Lewis. Thank you.
No, thank you, Matthew. And of course, we're doing it under your oversight and guidance. So thank you for that. And thank you, everyone, for your time. Hopefully, this was informative. Any follow-up questions, just let us know. And we look forward to talking to you. I think the next town hall, make sure you try to be there. It should be an interesting one because there'll be developments on all these litigations and all of these discussions. So thank you all very much. Have a good rest of your June, and we'll talk to you soon.